The final session is basically client accounts, should they be interfered with. We've got David Opie, who I'm sure you all know, chairing the session, Angela Hesketh, Mark Slade, Phil Edwards, Rob Stevens, and Scott Newby. Over to you, David.
Oh, go on then, Rob. That'd be amazing.
Can everybody hear me? Yes, excellent. Thank you so much. Lovely. Right, thank you. I think this is called the graveyard shift, so thank you very much indeed for sticking around for the final discussion of the day. I'm going to hand over to these guys in just a second to introduce themselves very, very briefly. The premise to this, really, as you guys are well aware, is the SRA's consultation, for starters, but let's not forget that this goes back sort of a few years before that as well, and some of the work that the Bank of England are doing as well. So I guess keep both of those things in mind in the course of the discussion. And there's a bit of time at the end as well. We're going to try and leave a little bit of time at the end for questions if you have them. So do start thinking about them for our panel. If I go from my right all the way round, you just give 30 seconds of an introduction to yourself. That'd be fab, please. Mark.
I'm Mark Slade. I'm CTO and chairman of Fiddler & Pepper. We're a conveyancing firm in Mansfield. We do fairly high volume transactional and remortgage work. And I've been involved in conveyancing and IT for the last 35 years.
Phil?
Phil Edwards. I'm managing director of QPI. We deal with solicitors insurance, mainly professional indemnity insurance. And I've been doing that for 25 years.
Afternoon, everybody. Scott Newby. I'm the Chief Compliance Officer and MLRO at Shieldpay, TPMA provider. Been there for just over 4 years. You can probably understand why I'm on the panel, but prior to that, I've spent sort of 20 plus years across fintechs and the banks working in compliance and in financial crime.
I'm Rob Stevens. I head up the property risk function at Nationwide and the Mortgage Works. Been in the industry for the last 23 years. And I'm responsible for all the properties that we lend them.
I'm Angela Hesketh, Head of Market Development at PEXA. I'm the background dual qualified conveyancer, was in private practice for 30 years until I moved out into industry about 4 years ago.
Thank you so much. So I thought it might be useful to start with perhaps some dictionary definitions. I'm going to throw to Angela and Scott to give us some information about synchronization, RTGS, real-time gross settlement, TPMA, third-party managed accounts, and any other acronyms that we can get our hands on as well. Angela.
Okay, right. So
good luck.
We love a few acronyms, don't we, in all of this. Okay, so RTGS, real-time gross settlement, it's the area of the bank that deals with sterling payments across banks, and it allows them to net off their different payments. It's where the likes of CHAPS and faster payments and things like that sit within the Bank of England. Synchronisation, as a comparison, is a project that the Bank of England are looking at in relation to, could they look at various asset types, not just property, in relation to ensuring you can synchronize both the payment and the transfer of the asset. So in a property situation, that would mean that no one person can hold the money and the asset. It goes into a sort of a vacuum, if you like, where both transfer at exactly the same time, so money and transfer of ownership. Just a quick description of what a PEXA is as well, just so we've got that. So a PEXA is one of the payment rails that sits alongside the likes of CHAPS and faster payments within the Bank of England. It's a payment-specific payment rail, and it deals with only property. It deals with direct payments and orchestration of payments between lenders and automated both validation and lodgement of title with land registry, or coordinated in one.
The other acronym, TPMA, third party managed accounts. They didn't just come into being when the SRA consultation came out, they came into being back in November 2019. In its simplest form, it's a a bank account just like you'd have at HSBC or an equivalent or Nationwide, given we have Nationwide here today. But it's with a fintech and it no longer falls under the SRA account rules. It's managed by a fintech like ShieldPay or another party. And in essence, to keep it really simple, it operates very similar to a bank account.
Hopefully that's about as clear as mud. No, thank you to you both. I said that, you know, we're talking about this a little bit in the context of the consultation, and I think the other thing to bear in mind is that we've got a cross-representation of firms here in the sense that we've got firms that will be doing just conveyancing, and then there will be firms here represented that have got full service, a full service. And there's, in fact, Scott was just saying before, he was in a room with a firm recently where even two partners, one was very pro TPMA and one was very anti, and within different departments. So we're trying to kind of have a grown-up debate about this in that context, I suppose. But I'm going to throw to Mark for just some thoughts around what challenges are presented by the consultation to give us the practitioners and hopefully a representative of your view of what the SRA consultation says and some of the challenges presented by it.
Okay. Well, it was hard not to see the consultation as a knee-jerk reaction by the SRA to the criticisms levelled at it for the problems with the Axiom Ints case. They got severely criticised because of the way they handled that, and then shortly afterwards we have the consultation coming out. The implication being that if Axiom Ints weren't holding client money, that there wouldn't have been a problem. But I don't really buy that because, as I understand it, this was a fraudulent activity. And if you've got a TPA involved, you would just tell them to send the money to your own accounts instead of doing it yourself. So to some extent, I feel this was very much a smokescreen. I have an issue with TPMAs in that it seems to be adding an additional level of complexity onto what we're already doing, additional level of expense onto what we're already doing, and an additional level of complication onto what we're already doing. So you can carry on.
I'm sure you can, but we'll come back to one or two of those points shortly. The lender's view, Rob, are the proposals workable? Have the lenders been given any consideration in any of this?
I suppose the short answer is probably not. So it's a consultation we're obviously aware of, but wasn't one we were necessarily brought into at the beginning of the process. To answer the question of is it workable from a lender's perspective, well, anything is practically workable. I guess we'd want to be very clear if we started sending money somewhere else, where's it going? What are the protections associated with it? What are the risks? Is it more beneficial than the processes that we have today? What are the costs associated with it? Who's going to pay for those? And quite frankly, if we're here and we're worried about how we improve the home buying and selling process, is this the number one thing we need to be tackling, is kind of my other kind of question.
Which rather begs the question, why are we having this debate? What is wrong with client account?
Why are we having this debate, yeah.
Perhaps somebody from the SRA might be here, you never know. There are fraud risks associated with client account, Phil.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the insurers are concerned, their biggest risk that they see associated with client accounts come from three areas. One is fund transfer fraud, where the criminal sits in between the two parties to the transaction and diverts the funds to their own account. The second is known as phishing or whale phishing or targeted fraud, social engineering fraud. It's where somebody within the solicitor's firm gets persuaded to release information which allows the criminal then to transfer funds from your own account into their account. That can be where the biggest losses can be seen because, generally speaking, it's multiple amounts that will disappear. The largest one I dealt with was £1.4 million. The third area is internal fraud, where somebody within the practice is drawing money out of the client account that they shouldn't be doing and putting it into their pockets. Ultimately, as far as the SRA, their concern is all about protecting the client and their money, and they're looking at the insurers as being the ultimate protection for that, which generally speaking they are. It's very difficult for an insurer to get out of paying a claim if client money is gone. And what insurers don't do is look to a particular account, whether it's Mr. Smith or Mr. Jones or Mrs. Evans, whose money is gone. If money is missing and it needs to get replaced, then the expectation is that they're going to replace it. To put that into some sort of context, the average firm who does conveyancing may pay a premium of around £50,000 or £60,000. Some pay a lot more, some pay a lot less, but on average, maybe about £50,000 or £60,000. Most of the claims that I deal with for either funds transfer fraud or any other type of fraud go into six figures usually, sometimes into seven figures. So to pay that claim, the insurer is going to need somewhere between 5 and 10 years of premium just for that one loss. And you only need the one loss for it to put a blot over your history.
And would that be helped by going to a TPMA?
Not necessarily, because even if you go to a TPMA, you will have a contract with the TPMA provider which will set out who's responsible for what. But ultimately, if the client has deposited their money with you as the solicitor and it disappears somewhere along the line, you as the solicitor are going to be the one who's going to be expected to pay out, and therefore it will be your insurer. So until you remove that risk, and a contract between you and a TPMA will never remove that risk, then the insurer will assume that they're going to be taking it on, unless and until that they're proved otherwise, and that would take time.
So what risk mitigation do RTGS and TPMA have that sort of cover what Phil's talking about, Scott and Andrew?
Yes, do you want to go first?
Yeah, can do by all means. I mean, in the PECS RTGS situation, what we don't do is lend money. We orchestrate the money and take the money directly from the lender account to its destination. So we're not holding that fund. We are activating that money across. So by definition, that's not exposed. In relation to the client fund element, yeah, I mean, you know, with all of those things, you've got to do your due diligence on the company or organisation that you are looking to deal with. And there is an expectation that you would do that. But if you do that and you get your approval through your regulator, which will depend which regulator you're with as to what avenue you have to do in that, and you operate in accordance with the terms of that TPMA, whichever it may be, then there is a liability that is taken on by that TPMA if a mistake is then made by them within their environment. Those funds are safeguarded and regulated under the FCA authorisation, and there is a wrapper around those. So you are receiving a better level of protection than you have today.
But what if we instruct you to send it to a fraudster? You'll send it to the fraudster, and it's our liability because we've done that.
In that situation, you would have to do your due diligence on that individual. You'd have to confirm that that was what you'd done. If that got to a point where you were having to do EDD, Regulation 33, we would also do additional due diligence on top of that as well to confirm whether we were willing to move that money. If both of those failed, two people within your organisation would have to approve that. We can't completely eradicate it, but we're adding an extra layer of security.
If these mistakes occur, it's normally at the law firm level, and that
those problems, regrettably, aren't going to go away.
Absolutely. I mean, they reduce, you're mitigating them, and you're wrapping a layer around them that makes sure that we can provide an extra layer of security. But you can never completely eradicate a bad actor. No. Or ultimately a very, very sophisticated fraud. But ultimately that would come down to the looking at the individual issues in that case and what happened, which is the same as today, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think, just if I may, following on to sort of Andrew, to some of the practicalities, as Andrew was saying, we're never going to mitigate fraud. It's whatever you try to do, somebody will find some way around. I've been in here for too long. However, what we do as a sort of TPMA is, for example, your client can view their project. So unlike a bank account, you actually have it an individual client matter just set up. So actually the client of yours can see what's going on. Now that isn't, again, a mitigator. But again, if something goes nefarious happens, it very quickly they'll be able to see it because they'll get alerts to say money has moved. Also as part of our sort of transaction, just like you go on your banking app, you're trying to move money, if you move it at certain things, you get a load of alerts up. We have similar sort of controls built in to the process when you're moving money. If accounts are changing right at the last minute, there'll be alerts coming up saying, why is that happening? So there are different sort of checks, controls, balances sort of built in that is there to help and support and sort of mitigate those risks, but it will never eradicate them.
Is there any way in which you can share liability?
So in terms of where, coming back to what Phil has said, for example, we have some services we offer that we will go and collect and manage all the bank account collections. So if they then fail, it sits on our insurance. So there is different things like that, and that's very clear in our agreement, but it comes down to the different types of services you want to take from the TPMA and what they do. But coming back, it's all very clear where it will sit. So yes, we will offset some of those risks, especially if you're sending money internationally and all that. We will go out and collect all the bank details. If they were then found to be wrong, it would sit under us and then we would have to pay out, for an example.
Is that liability limited by the FCA limit of 85,000?
No. Yeah, it's up to part of the DD when you're chatting to sort of providers is we have our own insurance, so we have crime cover, we have PI cover. It's within those values that they will typically self-insure up to.
I think the reality is, though, that taking it back to the start,
yeah,
the responsibility sits with the solicitor. If a client's money goes missing, the client will expect the solicitor, as the SRA will, to replace that money. If it goes missing and it's under your watch and there's a potential for it to be replaced by your insurer,
yep,
what you will have is a discussion between insurers. It won't be the client of the solicitor that goes to your insurer and say, can I have my money back? It'll be your insurer's lawyers who will be talking to the solicitor's PI insurance lawyers to debate whether or not the policy kicks in and whether or not the money should be rebated to them. But the first call will be on the solicitor's PI insurance, and then anything that's recovered will feed back into their claims experience and reduce the amount that's being claimed. But there's another couple of areas that I think we need to recognize. The first is, no matter how sophisticated that these criminals are, what it very often depends on is the human factor.
Yep.
Somebody somewhere either doing something that they shouldn't have done or not doing something that they should have done.
Yep.
That's what they rely on. And you will never be able to take that away, because it's always going to be there.
Yep.
And that's a key part of their strategy. It's, people tend to think that they've been targeted. That's not the reality. They're targeted in the sense that the criminal is looking for a niche. He's looking for somebody who's going to bring in the human error factor. And you're not going to be able to remove that. The second thing is that I mentioned before that it's covered under your PI insurance. The reality is it's covered under the SRA part of the PI insurance. I go to many firms where they will have a balance in their client money accounts.
that is 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 million pounds quite easily. Very few firms realise that the likelihood is only the first 3 million of pounds of that is going to be protected by their SIRA regulated policy. The rest of it is on their watch, and most of them just absorb that risk, mainly because they're not aware of it. The final point in all of this is that up until now, the main focus of the cyber criminals has been getting at firms' money, one form or another. That's been the case for the last 12, 15 years since I've been dealing with claims of this nature. The next part of the process will be going after data. And that is where some of the big money could lie for criminals. And again, if the data is transferred to somebody else, people will assume that that transfer means that it's that other person's responsibility, and it's not. It's still the original data holder's responsibility, which is the solicitor. So if that data is stolen and the solicitor has to deal with the fallout, then it's down to them. They may get some help from you and TPMA and their insurers, but the first port of call will be with the solicitor.
I think, I mean, on that point as well, in relation to the level of data security and all the rest of it that we put in place in these areas, where ISO 27001 or whatever it is, loads of 270s and ones, one of them. Anyway, in relation to the security, and we require the law firms to take it to that level. It's all mitigation. Ultimately, it's about making sure that people are at the right level and that we can wrap that protection around them. And
it is,
have
I'm
that
sure that Marks and Spencer's in the car for that as well.
Well, as I say, nobody can step away from what the next step is in relation to fraud. It's just looking at the best ways to protect yourself in that instance. And, you know, for many law firms, that's an incredibly harsh challenge for them on a day-to-day basis. And it's looking at what provides the best level of security for them around that.
And I think the ideal scenario is that this is taken as part of a package of risk management measures.
Yeah.
It needs to fit as a piece within a bigger jigsaw,
yeah.
And it needs to help make sure that the level of sophistication in the risk management of a firm improves and increases. It's not a static process. It's very much a dynamic one, and firms need to make the most of whatever processes that they can use to mitigate their loss. Presenting that in a structured way to an insurer gives the insurer much more comfort than saying, oh, we now use this, can you give us a discount? Because the answer will be no.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's ultimately about choice and seeing what is going to provide the best environment for you to transact in.
I think the other thing that we talked about in our prep call was that what works for one department, as we said, might not work for another, but this is something that you can pick up and drop on a department, but you don't have to use elsewhere, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
As a solution, I mean, obviously, if the SRA do away with client account, that's different, but...
Yeah, I mean, you know, whatever decision the SRA make, and I do not anticipate it to be a very dramatic one, you know, I'd be incredibly surprised, amazed, shocked, horror, whatever, if they decided that the future of client account is gone completely. I just don't see that. But this is about choice. You know, if you look at PEXA as one example, is property specific. So if you're in a multidisciplinary practice, you may decide or you may not decide that suits your property element of your practice. TPMA, such as ShieldPay or something of that sort, can go across your practice. You may want to do a mix. You may not want to do either. Ultimately, this is about what provides you with the best future focus for sustainability and protection.
I want to leave some time for questions. So if you're thinking of any questions, we'll have got some time at the end. Want really to kind of ask a final question really to you all, coming back to what you said, Rob, really, which is around it's not the biggest thing that we probably need to deal with in conveyancing at the moment. It's almost a bit of a red herring. I don't know whether people in the room feel like that. There are, from what the panel have said, there's things like fraud that needs to be taken into account. We've not really covered off interest yet, but it feels very simplistic to simply say, you know, this is a debate about client interest. I'll ask you this, Mark. Is the current system really broken in such a way that we need solutions as extreme as what's being proposed? How long have you got?
There's a lot to pick over there. The current system's not perfect, but I think the one thing we've not talked about really is the elephant in the room, which is that for either of these systems to succeed, they would need to be taking over a significant portion of the market. And the problem we got then is that a significant portion of completion monies on the day of completion are going to be passing through a small number of organisations. So they're going to be handling millions and possibly billions of money in one day. Now that then presents a massive risk in terms of it being sort of a brilliant target for hackers. Not just domestic hackers, you could have bad agents from say Russia or China. And at the moment, the system we've got, whilst not perfect, it is very distributed, and that distributes the risk as well. So currently, I mean, Simplify had problems a couple of years ago when they were hacked. They were one of the biggest conveyancers in the UK, and that did affect a lot of transactions. But that'd be peanuts compared to if one of these players was actually hacked. It could go way beyond just a load of completions going awry, and start to affect the UK economy as a whole, because you've really opened up a massive amount of risk by putting all your eggs in a very small number of baskets. And I think that is a huge point, and the current system shouldn't be underrated, because that it's got that built-in safety there already, and we shouldn't forget that.
I'll go down the panel, and I'm going to ask this question that's up on the board about, you know, should they be interfered with? Phil, I mean, client accounts, should they be interfered with? Big question.
The problem is client accounts are interfered with, as far as insurers are concerned, and that's where the risk lies. The process that is in place at the moment, as everyone has said, is not perfect. But it sort of works, and I like the idea that the risk is spread amongst others. I think from a cyber risk point of view, we've got to get away from the idea that it's, you know, a spotty teenager stuck in a bedroom in a darkened room that's playing with things. It's not. This is organized crime, and generally it's organized crime from either large criminal gangs or from threatening states of one form or another. If they want to get at you, they will do. And it doesn't matter how good these guys' protection is, they will always be one step behind the criminals because they're that sophisticated. So that is a very big risk. But the risk transfers back to the solicitor, but you've got no control over it.
Scott.
Okay, so you probably all are expecting me to say yes, they should. We've responded as a company that Shield paid to the consultation, and we've actually said, from a person who's been in compliance for many years, I really struggle with the consultation. They've provided the outcome without actually explaining the risk they're trying to actually deal with. It talks about removal of client accounts, but doesn't talk about the risks. To me, there needs to be choice, and for me, that remains where we have sit. We've been dealing with sort of law firms since 2019. We have been offering them. We don't need the consultation for our business model. It actually causes me a load of aggro at the moment because we've become Marmite. Some people love us, some don't, because of the consultation. But coming back to the security point, at the moment there's only a few big banks that move all this money around anyway. And actually, coming back to your point, is we are often multi-banked. I can't talk for all of our competitors. So actually, if one of the banks go down, we can use one of our other payment rails out. So the really interesting thing is we could bang and sort of, it's a bit like one punch, one knockout, back and forth here. There needs to be some more pragmatic reviews. As Phil said, we've got to bottom out some of the insurance discussions more, understand some of them rules. And there is an education piece within the market that we need to do more around and understand, and we need to bring that choice. It may not work for everybody, but I can tell you now we have a number of firms that are using us, and we have pumped through billions of pounds sort of through rails, and we've not had any issues. So that's just trying to give a balanced sort of view from an actual provider.
I think for me it comes down to risk and reward. As was just mentioned, I've dealt with a lot of financial crime over the last 20 years, and it's always been very sophisticated operations. It's, as you say, it's not just somebody in their bedroom.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're ever going to crack this unless you kind of are employing sophisticated criminals within your own business to try and stop it. So it comes back to really weighing up what is the risk to the industry today, what's the cost of bringing in new solutions, and does it actually add up as an industry to do so? But I think it's important that people have choice. So if people want to get rid of client accounts and go down that route because they think that's the best thing for their business, they should be given that option. But also people who want to stick with them again should probably be able to do so.
Yeah. I mean, firstly, I'd say, going back to your first point, there are many challenges within the property industry, of which this is one of them. And depending on where you sit is what you think is most important or least important. What I would say is, as a conveyancer, my view is always the core of a conveyancing transaction is about money and title. And you've got to get that right to ensure that that's an effective transaction. And therefore, we've got to keep coming back to that despite all of those other things that are going on. But I reflect what a lot of the other panel members have said. Ultimately, this shouldn't feel like the sword of Damocles across above your head. This is about choice. This is about what provides you with the best security going forward. This is about what's the best thing for you as a company and your client. And what does it do in relation to your risk profile, and how, and does it help question, does it not help? All of these things need to be worked through, but it is ultimately about looking forward at what that could be. I mean, we all know it's critical infrastructure in Australia. It's made a big change, PEXA, in Australia. That isn't to say, and we're not saying, that that's going to be what's going to happen here. But ultimately, it's about looking at the art of the possible and then seeing how that translates and seeing how that sits or not with your business, with your insurers, with the wider industry. And ultimately, I don't think none of this requires full adoption either. And to go back to Scott's point in relation to liability and exposure and risk and all the rest of it, in the PEXA situation, we're not holding the majority of the funds. We're orchestrating them from lender to lender. The majority of the money within property transactions is from lender to lender. So you're mitigating that risk, but there are always going to be other risks. You just need to know what those options are and make an informed choice ultimately.
Fabulous. Well, we've got a little bit of time for questions. If anybody has some questions, yes, we have one over here at the front, please. State your name and where you're from, please, first.
Thanks. Hi, it's Alex Holt from Cashroom. We've got quite an interest in this discussion. We provide cashiering support to about 300 law firms throughout the UK, and we moved about £1 billion for our clients on stamp duty deadline day, so we know the pressure of speed and efficiency. What I wondered was, if it's a process that isn't fully broken, it might not be optimal, but globally it isn't fully broken, isn't the solution actually that the SRA should be going after an improved use of tech, process, actual regulation and regulatory audit on the rules that exist and the tech that exists? So in other words, if they were monitoring things better, if they were tighter, we use Scottish regulation as a real base point because they do close downs of the books every day. they do daily recs. So those kind of processes, to me as a group, and particularly in the insurance sector, those removal of risks are probably achievable through better use of tech, better use of process, and actually supporting the finance function in the firm, because it's right at the heart of the risk. You know, you've got cashiers, et cetera, right at the heart of the risk in every law firm, and actually getting the tech right around them and the regulatory support would actually solve most of the things that at the moment aren't actually that bad, I would say.
It was a comment as much as a question. Does anybody want to have a...
I'm saying the current system is broken, but I'd say it's not broken. I would say it's not broken. I'd say there are certain issues, but a lot of the issues stem from the fact that you're dealing with human beings and human beings do stupid things. At completion the other week, the client paid us £1,000 less than he was meant to pay us, but then he switched his phone off because he was moving house that day. So we've got a whole chain resting on that. But because we're in the current system, we have the flexibility to say, well, actually, he owes £20,000 in stamp duty. We'll let this go ahead, and the whole chain moved. Whereas if it was all an automated system where everything's got to be bang up to date and all there, it couldn't happen.
I'm just being a curmudgeon again, as much as anything else. I actually don't think it's broken. I think it works reasonably well. The incidences of fraud, if you look at the number of transactions, are relatively low. Yep. We know what money needs to go where and when and how. And actually, we're regulated and we're insured and the client is protected by that. So I reckon, actually, we do a decent job on this and we don't need to come up with anything new. The other bit I would say as well with that is it troubles me that our regulators are the ones who are inferring that we're not trusted. I'll shut up now. Ta.
Can argue that, can they?
Do you get a round of applause?
You got a round. Any other questions? Any more for anymore? Okay, I have a quick question just before we finish. If that's okay. I just wanted to touch on sort of the potential increasing costs and potential impact on jobs at firms. Presumably, using new systems requires integration costs. It requires fees of using systems. Is the panel concerned that we might end up putting fees up to cover this, or will it end up costing jobs?
Sorry, did you want to go first? Go for it, and I'll follow.
So polite. It's nice.
I need to get out of the room. That's why I'm being polite.
Yes, so first of all, if law firms don't benefit from the interest on client account because the money is being handled in another way by TPMA or by PEXA, then that will need to be charged to the client because that's been subsidised in the fees that we charge for the last few years. Secondly, there'll be the charge made by the organisation, be it TPMA or PEXA, so that needs to be covered and passed on to the client. Thirdly, you've got either the complexity of integrating with them and the cost of integrating with them. So that's more expense to be passed on to the client. But then also, if you're not integrating with them, you're then introducing the issue of double entry of information, because you're putting it on one system and then you put it on the TPMA PEXA system. So that's another weak point where you could have potential problems. And then wrapping all that up, we talked about choice, and I totally agree, we all need to have choice. But if we are using the current system and using a PEXA or using a TPMA, that's two systems we've got to be running. And the cashiers or whoever we've got running it have got to be comfortable with both those systems. And again, it's another level of complexity, which again could lead to more issues and problems.
Yeah, so it's one that I hear a lot about is cost, and it's more costly. It's an interesting debate, and I've seen both sides of that discussion. I think first with the TPMA offering, you can integrate, you can do batch uploads, or you can use portals. So the law firm has that choice around how they want to engage with us. We do not dictate, and it depends on the size of the firm, how they wish to use us. There are efficiency gains by sort of doing the integration, of course, the bigger you are. But again, there's no difference to when a law firm is moving from one bank to another. It's just the same process, moving to a sort of TPMA as it would be moving to sort of a bank. Our charges and that are very similar. As we go through, there are different value add services, but then there are some benefits in terms of what you need to do from the SRA account rules. You don't need the audit, etc., but that may be something the law firm wishes to keep. There was one point that you raised, which we haven't covered, is interest. So we are payment services firms, so we're not a bank, so we can't say that we hold deposits. It's a regulatory thing. However, we offer an equivalent of what you would earn as interest. We call it income share. We share a proportion of the interest we earn from the banks back to you, just like the banks do, by giving you interest. So you will get that, and we will align that at a client matter as well, because again, using a TPMA, you get to see both the transaction in and also the client matter in one screen. So there is pros and cons, just like there is when you make that choice. Do I bank with NatWest? Do I go to HSBC? We just become another choice in that thing.
You have 30 seconds, Phil. Go.
Okay, just wanted to make one point, just based on what the gentleman down here was talking about. And you're absolutely right. Fraud is very rare. It doesn't happen every day, for sure. But what does happen is that when a firm suffers a fraud, there is a good chance that the resultant will be that that firm will close down. And I've seen this on numerous occasions. And it's because the SRA is not controlling whether that firm stays open or not. It's their insurer. And if their insurer decides, I'm sorry, we're not continuing with this risk, you can't find insurance elsewhere, then the firm has to close. And I've seen that more probably as a result of frauds than any other type of claim.
Well, that's as much
just to be the voice of doom and gloom again.
just to leave us on a good note, thank you. thank you very much indeed to the panel.
With us for another few minutes. I know some of you are suffering in the heat, particularly up there in the guards. That lady there has been fanning herself the past half an hour. So 5 minutes. Mark wants to say a few words before he goes as well. So if you'd like to come up, Mark. And thank you very much to the panel. Do you want to just stay there while Mark does?
All right, okay. Yeah.